right, y'all. Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's a podcast where we talk about the history and culture of death and decomposition. I forgot my name for a second.
Yeesh.
My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. How you doing, Max?
I'm doing pretty good. You remember the time we were in Iowa and you were really excited about roller meat?
Oh, yes. I'm ready for the roller meat.
Can you describe what it is?
It's roller meat. It's meat on a roller. It's when you go into a gas station and the only suitable protein product that you can buy is hot dogs or deep fried, then frozen, then thawed on a hot roller.
Taquitos.
Tornadoes, as they are colloquially known. Yeah, it's just any meat that you serve off of a roller. A rolling grill? I don't even know what those things are called.
I was at a gas station before this and saw that, and I was like, oh, I should ask Dorian about roller meat.
Yeah, I mean, if I die from anything, it's probably going to be consumption of things like roller meat.
There we go. That's a nice tie-in.
So it's not too off-topic. If you haven't listened before, this is a podcast about death. Max has prepared something for us to discuss. Max, what do you have for us today?
Well, without further ado, let's crack into this.
Ooh.
Oh, my laptop's covered in LaCroix now. That was the Pre-Dead Boys crack into the moment, which is officially unofficially sponsored by LaCroix.
Officially, unofficially.
We're getting there. So, Dorian, do you collect things?
Kind of. You know, I live in a two-bedroom apartment right now, so I'm kind of punished for collecting too many things.
Space.
You know, but yeah, I mean, I have books, records, graphic novels. I still have CDs, because CDs are cheap now.
So you collect those? Like, you buy more actively?
Yeah, I find myself, if I'm at a record store, and I'm like, hey, I can get this record on vinyl and not play it in my car for $25, or I can get it on CD here for $3. It's a great deal.
It's a beautiful format.
So yeah, not all the time, but yeah, I collect some things.
Cool. Today we are going to be talking about roughly collecting.
Okay.
But we do have to tie it in with death, or else we've gone entirely off-brand. Never get that LaCroix sponsorship.
Yeah, we definitely don't want to go on a tangent where we're just talking about figure skating and anime. That would be awful.
That'd be bad. So, if you could just reach under the couch.
Are you fucking with me this time?
This time, I am completely serious. This is my favorite visual gag.
There's a popcorn kernel or something.
There you go.
Oh, it's a Ziploc bag with...
What is that, Dorian?
Is this a desiccated frog?
That is a mummified frog.
No way!
Yeah.
Oh my god!
We found that at work one day, like under one of the doors, and I was like, well, I'm keeping this.
All the good faith that you lost with me from last time, when there was nothing under the couch, you just got it all back tenfold.
So this little frog used to live on my desk, and now it can live in the studio.
Aw, little guy. Have you named him?
No, he was in my desk drawer. Like, I barely even looked at him.
Cool. Well, maybe we can poll our listeners for suggestions on what to name this little fella. Lady? Fella?
I don't know how to tell.
I don't see a pee-pee.
Are you flipping it over?
I don't see one. Must be a lady.
This frog that we pulled out from under my couch. Ladies, if you're looking for someone who will pull dead things out from under your couch, maybe get it Dorian.
Hey, ladies, if you are looking for a fella who will hide dead things under his couch and make you pull them out without looking at them,
no,
this is Max.
Hey, so it's worth mentioning that we are going to be talking about mummy collecting today.
Yes!
To make a long story short, basically... A bunch of rich white people looked at an honored religious ceremony that had been around for millennia in Egypt and said, maybe that belongs in my living room.
Of course.
So I think we culturally have a pretty good but rough idea of what mummies are, but I just thought we could get a little overview just to be on the same page here. So if you want to scroll down there and then give us a little overview of the mummification process.
Yeah, let's take a look. Cool. Okay. Max has sent me a link to WikiHow. You know, he wants to instruct me on something, and that something seems to be embalming a mummy in ancient Egypt.
WikiHow rules, dude. There's so much good content there.
And I love that they have weird manga drawings for everything that they show you how
it's
to
incredible.
Do. So good. Embalming a mummy in ancient Egypt. Number one, wash the pharaoh's body. So you start out, obviously you have all of your materials together. You've got your pharaoh ready to go. Step two, remove the internal organs. Get those bad boys out of there.
Yeah.
Won't be needing those.
Can you read the last sentence in that section?
It's all pretty good. I'm going to read this whole step. Remove the internal organs. Make an incision on the pharaoh's side just under the ribcage. Remove the stomach, intestines, liver, and lungs. Set these sacred organs aside. Next, use a hook to remove the brain through the nose. Discard this organ.
The junk organ.
We don't need that shit. The brain.
Nothing's in your brain.
3, embalm the sacred organs. Place the sacred organs in ornate decorative jars. Fill these jars with embalming fluid or natron, a naturally occurring combination of baking soda and salt. Well, they really got a DIY mummification situation going on here.
You have to have a pharaoh first, so I don't know where you find one of those these days.
Oh, I'll get you a pharaoh. But... I'll find one. This will preserve the organs for use in the afterlife. The heads of the jars depict Imseti, Happy, the baboon-headed god, Duamutef, the jackal-headed god, and Kibesinuif, the falcon-headed god. 4. Wash the body with more wine. Palm wine can act as an antiseptic when used as a cleaning solution. Washing the body again with this wine will kill any bacteria that might disrupt the embalming process. 5. Embalm the pharaoh with natron. Natron will draw out all the liquid in the body to embalm it. Without bodily liquids, the pharaoh can't decay. Boomer.
Try as he might, he cannot decay.
He's trying. 6. Wrap the body with linens. First, cover the pharaoh in a royal funeral shroud. Obviously. Next, wrap the pharaoh with strips of fine linen. While wrapping, insert amulets and jewelry into the strips. You can also cast spells and chant incantations during this process. If you want. Just put a little put a little flavor on it. Depending on the time period, some pharaohs have their names written on each linen strip. Dorian, 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 Dorian. Do not touch. Dorian. Property of Dorian. It's my body. Don't touch it. 7. Place the death mask on the pharaoh. Each pharaoh has a death mask made of gold. These masks help the spirit identify the body in death. Gently lay the death mask over the pharaoh's wrapped head to complete the mummification. 8. Lay the pharaoh to rest. First, gently lay the pharaoh in the painted and prepared sarcophagus. Be careful not to disturb the death mask. After the sarcophagus is closed, the pharaoh can be placed in his tomb. Set the sacred organ jars around the sarcophagus and seal the tomb. You're helping people by reading WikiHow. WikiHow's mission... Oh, I don't need to read that. That's part.
Help WikiHow is not a step in the embalming process.
Step 9, donate to WikiHow.
Doesn't work if you don't. So you may have noticed that as we were going through that, you know, put some jewels in there, and then you put the big death mask on, which is made of gold. So as is the human condition, people immediately saw a big thing covered in jewels and said, yo, I want that. Yo. It's not just, you know, modern people that were trying to do that. Culture's obsession with appropriating objects using the Egyptian mummification process has a pretty long history, actually. And it goes back to the sarcophagus of Nektanebo II.
Nektanebo.
I have the luxury of pre-preparing this, so yes. I can phonetically write it out in my notes.
Yes.
So Nektanebo II was also known as Nakthorheb. Nakthorheb was the last true non-puppet pharaoh of Egypt before the Greeks rolled through and kind of took everything over. So he was the last real one that they installed themselves.
Kind of like the Queen of England, because the reptilians control everything.
Yeah. So the Queen is the last true ruler of Britain, and the reptilians are just letting her go for now.
That's weird. I'm getting an email. Apparently we have to take the history tag off of our podcast now.
So once Nakthorheb was killed, the Greeks were cool enough to let him be mummified and allowed a sarcophagus to be built, which you can see a picture of.
Ooh, it's like a bathtub.
Well, you said that. That's also exactly what the Greeks thought it looked like.
Oh, no.
So they allowed for this to be built, and then they were like, well, that's pretty cool, but also it looks like a bathtub. And so they didn't actually allow for it to be interred. And they took this dude's sarcophagus and moved it back to Greece, where they just used it as a communal bath for like a long time.
It reminds me of when I'm at work and someone puts donuts in the kitchen in the office. And I know I should stop, but the donuts are right there. And I'm like, man, I don't even care. I'm just going to have a donut.
I don't care if this is this dude's sarcophagus. I'm kind of dirty.
I could really bathe in that thing. I bet it could wash me real good.
I bet that's going to get me cleaner than any other thing. And it's remarkable because if you look at the bottom of that sarcophagus, there's like little holes in it. They just drilled holes in the bottom of this so they could plug it to make it a better bathtub for them.
So it'd be easy to drain.
Yeah, so it's easier to drain. Like, you'd pull the things out and all the water would just go away and you'd be like, all right, cool.
It doesn't help that the setting of this particular photo, I don't know if this is a museum or what the deal is, but there's stairs and railing that just remind me of a jacuzzi. It looks inviting. Not gonna lie, I would put my butt in that tub.
I mean, it's goth as fuck. Like, they're bathing in a big coffin, which is rad.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know how Alexander the Great is rumored to have been buried?
No.
He died, obviously.
What?
So he died, and they put him in a glass coffin, and then filled the coffin with honey.
I feel like I've heard this before.
That's a process known as mellification.
Mellification?
Mellification. Because honey doesn't decay.
Right.
Or rot. If you have a dead body in it, you probably don't want to eat it anymore.
Speak for yourself, but I see your point.
So they filled it with honey, because they were like, well, it's not going to decay, so it's going to be fine.
Okay.
So as I was going about this research into mummy thievery and kind of looking at the history of it, it has really been around for a long time. So if you scroll down to the next page there, what's going on in that picture?
We've got a skeletal set of remains. It's standing against a wall next to what looks like another set of remains covered in a sheet. And then there's a dude just kind of sitting next to him, like with his head in his hand. He looks tired, had a long day or something.
Yeah, a long day.
Is he dead?
No, he's alive.
Oh, okay.
He just had a long day selling those mummies.
Oh.
Those are probably mummy forgeries. This is a photograph taken in 1875 of a street vendor selling mummy forgeries.
Hmm.
And again, I really love how much visual content we're doing in this audio-only podcast. It makes me extremely happy. He is selling mummy forgeries to a lot of the Egyptian colonizers that were around at the time, primarily French, but they were going through the markets, and people saw a way to make a quick buck, and they would make forged mummies to sell to tourists.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, some of these French colonizers also got real mummies. So if you would scroll down again, what you're going to see there is a photo of an unwrapping party.
Oh, man, that's the best present.
There's an oil painting below that, too. It's really nice.
Ooh, now wait, are they unwrapping linens off of the body? They're not peeling the skin off of this corpse, are they?
They're just taking bits of the skin off.
Yeah.
No, they...
unwrap him.
People would purchase actual mummies. I know the WikiHow article said you had to have a pharaoh. You don't actually have to have a pharaoh.
Ooh, any little DIY hack there. You don't need a real pharaoh. It's just the pharaoh industry is trying to upcharge you.
It's an upsell. You could mummify with anybody. Any Egyptian could be mummified. So there were a pretty good amount of mummies. And so sometimes rich Europeans would go buy actual mummies. And they would ship them back to Victorian England or whatever. And then get real drunk, like fucking blitzed. And then unwrap the mummies in their parlors with a bunch of other people.
Man, that is rough. I mean, I've heard of people doing foul things after drinking, but... Bro, you want to see a dead body?
Yo, check it out. You can't see it now. We gotta unwrap it first. It's gonna be rad.
It's like Christmas, but dead.
It's like a really shitty Christmas.
Do you think that there were any situations where somebody would do this, but they bought a forgery not knowing it? And so they unwrap it and they're like, this is just clay. Damn it.
Do you think they would unwrap it and then get partway through and notice and then have to be like, I really feel pretty sick. Like,
oh, I can't do it. I'm too scared.
Let's go play parlor games as we do in the old days.
Man, parlor games were pretty raw. I just assumed they were all really innocent and cutesy. Like, we got a hoop and a stick and, like, just primitive shit. But you got this, like, unwrapping party, like... Let's go sit at a table and flick some marbles at each other, and then let's go unwrap a dead body.
And then what do you do with it after that? You just, like, throw it away?
I don't... Yeah, it's spent, man. You've unwrapped it. That's all that you can do with a dead body.
Well, let's go throw it in the River Thames. I don't know.
Play pranks on your friends with it. That's what I would do.
You just, like, put it under your friend's bed sheet so that when he walks into the room and pulls his sheets back, he's like,
yeah.
Oh, you got me again.
Yeah, or maybe hide it under a couch, maybe.
It's not a frog, though.
You have to have a big couch.
So, because this was a fairly common practice of selling mummy forgeries, a few of these mummies ended up in some fairly prominent places and caused a pretty high degree of embarrassment for some communities. One of the earliest and most embarrassing instances I could find was the Hackensack mummy in Hackensack, New Jersey.
Where does he get the name?
There's evidence, if you look at the feet of the mummy, that he's got some, like, calluses on the inside of his foot.
Uh-huh.
From Hackensack. Man. I really burned all my good jokes earlier when I was goofing on Kids Bop upstairs.
Yeah. That's what our listeners want to hear. No, I'm sorry for setting up that wretched joke for you. I'm the one to blame for that.
The shittiest alley-oop ever. So if you scroll down, I've attached an article from the Washington Post, which mm-hmm. I would really enjoy for you to read.
Okay. Headline is, Egyptian princess mummy, mere rag-stuffed dummy. Hackensack, New Jersey, October 25th. 1928. The prize exhibit of the Bergen County Historical Society for the last 26 years has been the mummy of an Egyptian princess reposing in the museum occupying the top floor of the Johnson Public Library here. Thousands of the curious have gaped at it. School children have been led on expeditions to view it and report back in class that such antiquities are preserved with bitumen or spices, gums of natron, and honey. Civic authorities have included it in leaflets listing the things to see in Hackensack. Impelled by some unknowable influences, Mrs. Frances A. Westervelt, the curator, decided today to open the box and remove the glass. She had been examining the Egyptian princess 2 minutes when attendants were startled to hear an irreverent burst of laughter. The mummy, Mrs. Westervelt discovered, was a dummy. The body was stuffed with rags. It had feet but no legs, and the feet were not mates. It had one hand but no wrist.
I don't even know how that works. Like, the wrist is such a small part of your body to cut out.
Was it just fingers connected to an arm bone?
It's like when a child draws a person and there's like a stick with a circle on the end and then five tiny sticks point off it.
The head was empty and there were holes where the eyes, mouth, and nose are supposed to be. Now wait,
that's accurate.
That could be just a skull. That could be a decayed human being. Anyway. Quote, the Hackensack minister who had the mummy sent here while on a visit to Europe never saw what was inside the box, Mrs. Westervelt explained. No one connected with library or museum had the slightest idea of the deception. I love to have children come here and ask me all sorts of strange questions about the princess. Older folk would come and wonder whether she was a descendant of King Tut.
Here's the banger.
Mrs. Westervelt directed that the relic be burned.
So basically, like, someone gifted them this mummy.
Yeah.
And for 26 years, which is insane.
A long time.
They had this on display, and no one, I guess, really looked at it that closely. And then this Mrs. Westervelt decided to just pop the glass off it and check what was under it, and then was like, wait a minute. This mummy has two left feet. I assume that's what it means when it says feet were not mates.
Or one was like pro basketball player sized and the other was a size 5.
Like they're just really comically different sizes.
Yeah. And then she's just like, oh, all right, fuck this thing, and throws it into the
like
fire.
Burns it. Like they just go down to the furnace and they're like, all right, this sucks.
Damn. We got dummied.
Well, the fucked up thing is that, like, this, I assume, was clearly people parts. It's human body parts.
Yeah. Yeah, the implication seems to be it was fake in that it was not a single intact human being.
Yeah.
But it was still human remains.
Yeah. It was like a Frankenstein's monster thing.
Cool. So you're chucking into the fireplace not one dead person, but, like, 5 or 6 or 7.
And it's also bonkers that this dude who bought it from Egypt in the first place apparently never looked at it.
Yeah.
I'm in this market. I'm going to buy a mummy. Just ship it on back. I'll get it when I get home.
Paying God knows what. Back in 1928 was probably $5.
$5 for a transatlantic mummy crossing.
And when you adjust that for inflation, that's like $3.5 million.
So you would think that after this pretty public debacle, like this is in the Washington Post,
right,
which is a notable newspaper,
yeah,
people would start paying more attention to the mummies that they were importing via questionable means from Egypt. But they...
some asshat is in a different city like, I would never, ever buy a mummy without checking it first.
So, if you scroll down, you'll see another fake mummy that resided in the Mississippi State Capitol building in the 1960s.
Damn. They got had, what, 40 years later?
Yeah, those, people keep getting got.
Those who keep getting dummied are doomed to repeat it forever.
I think that's one of the proverbs in the Bible.
Yep, something like that. So this definitely looks... I mean, maybe it's just because I know this, since you told me that it's a fake, but it does not look real. It looks like a horror movie prop.
Yeah, and it has a pretty storied history. There's this dude named Brevoort Butler, and he lived in Yazoo County, Mississippi.
Yazoo!
Yazoo!
Woo!
If we have any listeners from Yazoo County, Mississippi, we would love to hear from you, because
yeah,
that county name is very good. But this old dude, Brevoort Butler, loved to collect old stuff. He was very rich, but he was also pretty gullible. So people would sell fake stuff to him constantly. Like,
yeah.
People would just come to him and be like, hey, I found these rubies. And they were just like rocks they had painted red. And he'd be like, oh, well, I got to buy those. And he would just give them money.
Yes, sucker.
So when he died, all his stuff got sent to the Mississippi State Capitol building. One of the things in his collection was this mummified Egyptian princess. So they put it on display in 1961 in the Capitol building, like you do with mummies in the 1960s, I guess.
Sure.
This article is sourced from a journal called the Delta Review.
Okay.
And I'm an intellectual. Like, I found this journal article through EBSCOhost. And it is Volume 6, Issue 9.
Ooh.
And it was published in 1969.
Nice.
So in 1969, 8 years after this... Nice. 8 years after this mummy goes on display, a medical student at the University of Mississippi said, this doesn't really look right. As you mentioned, like, it doesn't look great.
Yeah, it looks like the host of Tales from the Crypt. The Crypt Keeper.
And they asked to do some testing on the quote-unquote mummy. So, if you'll read that, here's the results.
The mummy in question is composed of a wooden frame containing an assortment of some 60 nails and tacks, covered with burlap, newspaper, a thin cottony material, plaster, and paper mache-like substance, and finished with brown paint. Stuffed in various parts of the mummy were pieces of newspaper, one portion from a German language newspaper, and another from the Milwaukee Journal from 1898, which at least provides some clue about the mummy's possible age and origin.
Which is... like, incredible that this dude, Brevoort Butler,
yeah,
was such a sap that some teens, I guess teens would probably do this, were like, we're going to make a paper mache mummy and sell it to the old rich dude at the end of the street.
I love that prank. That's a very good prank.
You know who else loved that prank? Was the entire town of Jackson, Mississippi, where the mummy was on display for a long time.
That's awesome.
I mean, like, they were, like, really hype about it, and I guess they thought it was super funny, because every year, up to the current day, they take this and wheel it out and put it back on display.
Hey, remember that fake dumb mummy? Look at it! Ha ha! Idiots!
Man, old-timey people were so stupid! So, again, if you're in Jackson, Mississippi, and you're listening to this, if you could just send us a photo of you with this mummy, because it looks like it would be rad as hell.
Yeah, we're going to retweet that. We're going to put that out into the world.
Yeah, you'll get some of our 30 followers that we have right now. I also really love that in Hackensack, when they discovered that their mummy was fake, they were like, ah, burn it.
Yeah, get rid of it.
Get rid of it.
They really missed out on a lot of pranking opportunities, a lot of just public interest, really.
Yeah.
It was a bummer.
It's a real drag. But Jackson, Mississippi was like, man, they got us good.
That's pretty good. Let's show people.
Show everyone.
Let's show them how good they dummied us.
Also, like, equally as fucked up was the fact that the Hackensack one was real people, and they were like, ah, throw it away, burn it. And this one is like paper mache and stuff with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And they were like, let's keep this one.
They actually have some reverence for the newspaper shoved into a wooden frame.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately, this can sometimes take a more sinister direction.
Ooh.
Not all fake mummies are made out of papier-mâché and popsicle sticks. The most famous and recent example of this is probably the Persian princess mummy. So this mummy originated in Pakistan in the year 2000.
Whoa, didn't the world end back then?
I think we just got switched over and that's where the Berenstain Bears.
Oh, that's where that switch happened?
Yeah.
When the reptilians did a prank on us.
The reptilians came in. They got us good. So a guy named Ali Akbar was running like a little mummy shopping network from his house, and he was trying to move this mummy he had. Like he was holding on to a hot mummy and had to get it off the streets.
Hot mummy is my favorite childhood game.
How do you play hot mummy?
Well, you know, you heat up your mummy that you have, and then you throw it at the other kids. It was my favorite pastime.
My goth parents are super fun.
So you've got this hot mummy that you got to hand off.
Yeah, you have a hot. He's got a hot mummy that he's got to hand off. And eventually, you know, Interpol comes down on him because of it. Not the band, but the International Police Agency.
Thank you for clarifying that.
I love Interpol. They start pressing him, and he goes like, well, it's not actually my mummy. I'm just selling it for a friend, which is incredible. It's like he just got caught with like a little baggie of weed.
Right.
And an officer. Like, it's not mine. It's like, it's my friend left it in my car.
Oh, I got framed. I think that officer planted that mummy on me. He snuck that mummy into my pocket.
So he was trying to sell it for his friend who found it after an earthquake. Which I don't know how that really works. I guess like a cave opens up or something like that. But he was trying to sell it for $11 million, which is astounding.
Hey, shoot your shot.
And he had it verified by a professor from Quaid Eazam University, who said that it seemed to be from the year 600 BC.
Okay.
So I don't know how this was verified. I don't know if this professor saw it in person or if it was shot on like one of the old like Roswell videotapes. Like you've seen those where it's like, this is an alien autopsy, but it's a camera that's
real shaky.
On like a paint shaker at Home Depot.
Thank you for demonstrating that too, that I got to see you shake violently.
While you're holding this camera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like super grainy, like the overexposed, and this guy's like, I guess maybe it's from 600 BC.
Made a real Bigfoot looking video.
Yeah. But this mummy was also found to be in a layer of honey, just like Alexander the Great. And it also had a bunch of gold plates on, which is probably how the guy was boosting it up to the $11 million price point.
Gold is worth money.
Gold is worth money. Econ 101. So since we lost the history tag by talking about the reptilians, I'm going to recategorize this as finance economics. But eventually, when they carbon dated the casket that the Persian princess was in, it was found to only be about 250 years old.
Ooh, okay.
Which is not 600 BC. They did some further investigating, and the body was found to be that of a woman who most likely died around 1996.
Whoa.
So about 4 years before this mummy hit the market.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So it's kind of unclear if this person was murdered for the body,
right,
for mummification purposes, or if it was a grave robbery, which isn't uncommon in that region of the world. The primary reason people rob graves is for the black market organ trade,
okay,
which is really gross.
Yeah.
But still, it's remarkable that these falsified mummies can happen now.
Very recent. Wow.
Yeah, like the year 2000, people are trying to hawk fake mummies for $11 million on the market. And if that's an equivalent price point to what these people earlier were paying for their mummies... Like, this dude just went and shelled out $11 million and was like, I don't want to look at it. Send it back to Hackensack, New Jersey. You feel like a real doofus.
Shelling out some real cash for that fake mummy.
So, just kind of as a final bit of faux mummy banter, while we're talking about major cash, do you have $35,000 handy?
I have $1. Here you go.
Thanks, man. So this $1 gets
yes.
you $1 closer to taking a trip to Maine and buying a mummy from a dude named Terry Lewis.
Sweet. I'm going to take this back because I'm trying to buy a mummy.
Trying to buy a mummy here.
You got dollar mummies?
Well, he bought this mummy from an auction.
Okay.
Which is buck wild. That's crazy. He paid $8,000 for this mummy.
Okay.
So apparently the mummy market has no set price point.
Just... pick a price, just whatever sounds good to you.
$11 million? 8,000.
Whatever.
I think part of it is the jewels and the casing that it's in.
Yeah. Like, the worth comes from other things that are observably worth money.
Yeah, like, it's kind of historical value as well. Like I mentioned earlier, anyone could be mummified. So if you had a pharaoh or princess, you could get a lot more money than if it was just like, Jeff from down the street got mummified.
Oh, was that a Jeffrey Dahmer reference?
No,
he did the opposite of mummies.
Yeah, he did do the opposite of mummies. So after this dude, Terry Lewis, bought this mummy for $8,000, he got in a huge fight with everyone who was like, you can't just buy a mummy at an auction, dude, and hired an Egyptologist named Peter Lacavara to examine the mummy and kind of make a calling. Lacavara came in as like an arbitrator and was like, so we've got some people saying that the mummy's worth millions of dollars. This dude's saying it's worth $8,000. I'm going to step in here and check it out. So I have his findings written here.
Okay. Lacavara presented his findings to Egypt's Supreme Council of Antiquities, which dropped its interest in having the mummy returned to Egypt.
Because it was a shitty mummy.
According to Lacavara, who is now curator of ancient art for the Michael C. Carlos Museum at Emory University in Atlanta. A few months before the inspection, the U.S. Customs Service lifted its seizure order, freeing Lewis to sell the mummy with Egypt's permission. Quote, they, the Egyptians, basically said, thank you. They realized it was of little value to them. It's worthless because it has no history. It has no coffin. Therefore, it has no artistic value. Its only value is as a curiosity.
It's a person, which is really strange.
Nope. No coffin. No history. Dog shit.
Burn it.
Burn it.
Like, apparently once you're mummified, your worth as a human being just goes out the window and no one cares what happens to you, which is kind of dark.
Max, if you get mummified before I die, I would totally collect you, bud.
Thanks, dude. Appreciate that.
Yeah, I got you. Literally.
You would own me.
I would own you.
You would own me because apparently once you're mummified, you become a commodity.
Yeah.
Not a person.
You're my paperweight, bud. It goes on. Lewis said he started to realize the mummy was worth more to him in his shop than in some stranger's hands. In a town rife with antique stores, the mummy set his shop apart from the competition. I'm just having too much fun with it to part with it, he said. The mummy has become a big hit with school children who visit the shop. Lewis keeps dozens of notes from students, including this one from Jeremy, a fifth grader in Belfast. Dear Terry, I think your mummy is really cool. Thanks for letting us hold the mummy's foot.
You can't let kids do that. I mean, it's not like diseased or anything, but still.
Hey, you want to touch his foot? That's so weird.
I don't know what's going on in Belfast, Maine. If you're listening to this from Belfast, Maine, please hit us up. We would love some listener mail. predeadboys@gmail.com.
We would also love to touch a mummy's foot. If you can procure a mummy foot for us that we can touch.
I'll have a P.O. box set up if you want to do that. I don't know what's going on in Belfast, Maine that these fifth graders... It's like, yeah, there's a mummy at the antique store, but these kids are on a field trip to an antique store.
Yeah, I've never heard of Belfast, Maine. And if I know anything from living in Ohio... It's that if your city is named after a major internationally known city, like Rome or London.
Or New Rome.
Yeah, then there is not a lot going on in your town. So I would guess that the same is true of Belfast, Maine. Antique stores are probably the most excitement they're going to see.
When apparently they had tons because this dude was like, man, I got to find something to set my store apart from all the others.
Just tons of antique shops.
I know.
I'm drowning here.
I'll buy a mummy. That'll get my head above water.
Hey, that would work. I would check that mummy out for sure.
Yeah, and like while you're there, he's like, hey, do you want to buy these old Dwight Eisenhower campaign pins for $7?
I do like Ike, yes. Do you have any I like that mummy pins?
He's like, I got to brand the mummy.
Market the mummy. No, I would buy some random tchotchke from that store if I could look at a mummy. Like, truly, I would visit Belfast if I could guarantee I could take a gander at this mummy.
again, you could buy the mummy if you have $35,000.
I'll work on it. I've kind of been between buying a house or buying a mummy, so I'm kind of leaning toward the mummy, honestly. It's a better deal, I think.
One is exponentially cooler, and it's the mummy.
And I can sell it for $11 million to some schmuck.
Who's going to ship it across the Atlantic.
Yep.
So you may not want to buy this mummy because it's not really great looking, as you can read in the next paragraph I've attached there.
The mummy is not particularly attractive, with its partially wrapped body, blackened limbs, arms crossed, and empty sockets where its eyes once were.
You mentioned this earlier. Everyone mentions, like, oh, the mummy's really ugly. It's got empty sockets where its eyes were. And it's like, what do these people think happens?
Your eyes are like jello. There's not a lot there that's going to get preserved very well.
No.
Over any period of time.
No.
Those are going to melt right out. Also, skulls are dope as shit. So if you got empty eye holes in your mummy, I think you should upcharge that. That's value.
Maybe people are expecting to be like a movie and the eyes are popped out and there's like gems in there or something.
Maybe. I don't know. Lewis said he would love to hear from Stephen King, the Bangor, Maine mega novelist. Quote, "We can do a deal between a couple of down east Maine boys. I'll even load the mummy on the truck for him." Hell yeah.
It's very conscientious of him.
Love it.
To be like, oh, thanks for coming to my shop, Stephen King, and thank you for giving me $35,000. Let me help you put this mummy on your truck.
Hey, he just re-upped on it money, so he's got $35,000.
He did. And there's actually a couple photos of this mummy online.
With Stephen King?
Not with Stephen King. Stephen King has not been there. The mummy is, as mentioned in that quote, pretty gnarly looking.
Tight.
Like, it doesn't look great. I mean, it's a mummy. It's down there.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of in a glass box. So I don't know if Terry Lewis is willing to sell you the case that it's in with the mummy, or if when he's going to load it in the back of Stephen King's truck, he's just going to like take it out of the case and put it in his truck bed.
Just chucking it in there.
I mean, he doesn't really seem to care about it. So
yeah.
Pitching it around everywhere.
And I don't know. You know, if you sell cell phones for a living and you're like, well, you got to get a case and then you make a little extra money. Like, what are you going to do? It's like, well, you got to get a case.
You got to get the mummy.
You got to get the mummy case. I mean, come on, Stephen King. Like, no, Stephen King came by and bought your trash mummy that you don't even want. Because he recognizes a deal. Stephen King recognizes, and he doesn't shame mummies for not having eyes. He recognizes that it's very cool and that he should have that hanging up in his home, which I assume is a castle made out of bones.
So, this may be news to you. Neither of us is Stephen King. So, maybe Terry Lewis won't load the mummy into our truck when we go purchase it. But we could still buy it from him if we have $35,000.
Sweet.
So, we should probably tell people how they can give us money to put in our mummy fund.
Yeah, I do want to wrap up this episode with a few announcements, but first and foremost amongst them, let's be clear here. If you give us money and support our podcast, we're not going to buy microphones. We're not going to spend the money on podcast publishing fees or anything like that. We are creating a mummy fund.
I almost ripped my finger off earlier hammering some blankets up for sound insulation, and we could buy a better hammer for like $6. But we won't. This is a mummy fund now.
Yeah, mummy fund for sure. So we do have a Ko-Fi website, and you can find the link to that on our Audio Boom website where we host our podcast. But hey, if you want to support this podcast, we would love if you would listen to it, subscribe, share with friends, typical stuff. That helps us out a lot. And if you are an Apple user and you leave a 5-star review, that helps us out a whole bunch. Just wanted to give a quick shout out, if I may, to a couple people who left us some 5-star reviews.
Go for it.
We have 2 reviews now. Woo! We're coming up in the world.
5-star.
5 stars.
That's remarkable that...
Ooh, there's one here.
Any of the dumb shit we say gets a 5-star review.
Hey, Max, there's one here that does not have 5 stars. It has 69 stars.
Nice. Come on.
We've got one here from Dustin Pierce. Thank you, Dustin. The headline says, "Supper fun, lighthearted podcast about death." So I guess he's saying it's a good dinner time podcast.
Are you making fun of a listener on the radio?
I might be. Sorry, Dustin. Love you, bud. We've got another one from Big Brother B. Thanks, B.
Thanks, B.
Says, putting the fun in funeral. These guys are killing it. They slay each episode. Nice.
Nice.
And I'm dying to hear the next story. Whoever posted that, I usually hate puns and want to put my head through a wall when I hear them, but I gotta give respect where it's due. That was a great review, and thank you very much for it.
Danke, Shane.
Were you going to say something?
No, I already said it in German, so that's what I was going to say.
Cool. So, again, if you're on an Apple device and you want to leave us a review, that would be dope. If you're on any device, just tell a friend about your device and the cool podcast that you listen to on it. Our intro and outro music is the song About Time by the band Brat Curse. Thanks, Brat Curse. Looking forward to hearing more from them. You can check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com.
And support them there as well.
Yeah, throw some money at them. They don't have a mummy yet either.
It's like a between school fundraiser where we're competing to raise money to buy a mummy.
Who can buy the mummy first? Hey, you can follow us on Twitter at PreDeadBoys. You can join our Facebook group. Just search Pre-Dead Boys Podcast. Email us at predeadboys@gmail.com.
Especially if you live in Jackson, Mississippi, or that city in Maine.
Bangor. Belfast.
Belfast. And your city just inexplicably has a mummy on display sometimes.
Yeah. If you have any kind of cool mummy-related oddities or photos, or your town has a mummy that you want to talk to us about, we would love to hear about that. We'd love to hear episode suggestions for things that we should cover in the future. We would love to hear any feedback that you guys have. Thank you so much for listening. And Max, you got any parting thoughts for our listeners?
No.
I got a little wisdom we can leave our listeners with.
You got a little wisdom? This is going to be our stinger?
Oh, it's not a stinger. It's just practical life wisdom that you should remember and carry out in your life.
Uh-huh.
Don't be a dummy. Make sure it's a real mummy. Heyo!
I am ending every episode with that, and you will never live it down.
Damn it. Alright, thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye! Lewis said he would love to hear from Stephen King, the Bangor, Maine... Oh, okay. I got fucked up on
the Bangor.
The Bangor. I thought it was a list of people. Stephen King, the Bangor, the Rancor.
What's Rancor? Is that Dune?
Those are just sandworms. The Rancor is from Star Wars.
Okay.
He's in the pit.
Not the Sarlacc.
No, not the Sarlacc pit.
Okay.
Okay, Luke Skywalker goes to visit Jabba.
Okay.
He says some stuff.
Uh-huh.
He has the floor drop out from underneath him, and he falls into the Rancor pit. He fights the Rancor, kills the Rancor, and then there's the epic battle over the Sarlacc pit. So the Sarlacc, and we will talk about this for at least 15 minutes.
And we are going to leave it in the episode, too. This is remarkable. I've never seen Star Wars, so I'm learning right now.
What the fuck? Really?
Yeah, not a single one, because I'm a big, dumb idiot and just don't watch movies ever.
Oh, well, they're maybe worth it. I don't know. If you're not a kid, they're probably not as cool. But the Sarlacc pit is like these revolving teeth around a big undulating gross pit that's like, I don't know, 50-100 feet across, maybe bigger.
Uh-huh.
And people just keep dropping into it and dying. It's very cool. But before that, he fights this big beast called the Rancor, and it's very cool because I had a toy set with a, like, Mighty Max sized Luke Skywalker fighting a Rancor that was about the size of a fist.
That's pretty cool.
And it all fit in like a little C-3PO head.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.